Hello, everyone. Yes, I know. Welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. My name is Michael Bailey. I'm back behind the microphone, which is nice. It's been a long time. And we'll get on to the apologies over the podcast in a bit. But I'm joined today by Sports Desk Pete Raven and EDP Chief Norwich City Writer Paddy Davitt to chat through, let's be honest, quite a few bits because it's been a while. So, as I said, apologies. It looks quite bad that we've just come back after Norwich have got a positive result, given the last three have been pretty shocking. So we will touch into that now. But you might as well blame a six-week-old son for that as well, can't we? We can do that, Pete. That's fine, can't we?
Blame him for everything at the moment, can't he? Your haggard look, your lack of sleep.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you for that. It is true to say that Norwich haven't won since Archie was born. But we're not, you know, we're not.
A lot of things have happened there, haven't they?
This is true, and we'll get into that too. All right, then. So, Paddy, we missed. Well, in terms of podcasts, we were there, obviously. Leicester.
I was there every single minute. There's nothing I haven't missed, sadly. Leicester, yeah, Leicester was positive until the ground moved for the Leicester fans.
Oh, yeah.
That's the story I didn't really want to be hearing last week. Who cares? Because it's a constant reminder of a very good performance that day with a sting in the tail, but you know, if we're being harsh, self-inflicted again, so we say the same things.
Indeed, they did play better that day. They played quite well at home to Chelsea, but they got done by a dodgy offside decision because Diogo Costa wasn't offside effectively, and also the fact they conceded a goal after 39 seconds. Was there anything positive out of the Chelsea result, Pete?
The result, no, because we lost.
Right, that evening then, the Chelsea evening.
It was the atmosphere was flat anyway, but to go behind so quickly just killed it off completely in terms of the crowd. But yeah, in terms of the performance, there was one or two improvements there. It was a case of, do you then go on and build it? But didn't really work, did it?
No, because Norwich then went and lost 1-0 at Swansea, which it was weird because it wasn't a very good game, was it, Pad? But off the back of the result, the performance has almost become worse. That's how I've tended to feel about it, because the first half was pretty even. Let's be honest, Swansea were distinctly average, and they need to still probably be a little bit careful because they're probably one win away from actually making sure they survive safely, if that's not too many words. But was it that bad at the Liberty?
Yeah, it was pretty bad, mate, yeah. Without wanting to rewrite history, I thought they didn't do enough in the first half when, as you rightly say, Swansea were equally as tense, which was surprising given they're coming off the back of the Arsenal win at the Emirates. But to me, that was almost, they all turned up thinking, OK, well, we've had this unexpected win. We can really, more or less, put ourselves out of the equation if we can beat Norwich. And when they weren't really looking like they were going to do it, there was a noticeable tension in the home ranks. But you know, Norwich switched off again, and then from the moment they scored, yes, okay, he went for it, Bamford went on, Mbokani went on, and they created a few chances, but there was no conviction, and that was a very worrying, you know, of all the phases in this sort of spell since they beat Southampton on the 2nd of January. That was the most concerning for me at the moment, from Leroy Fair, formerly of this parish, setting up Sigurdsson to score, because it almost looked like the players themselves didn't believe they could get back in. And if that was the feeling you came away with from that game, and more importantly, those punters who made that unbelievably long trek, then you did fear that, OK, that was the beginning of the end. But thankfully, that wasn't the case, because we had Man City.
Yeah, spot on in terms of the belief. I still remember sitting at home watching Aston Villa on, you know, by means, and being so thoroughly disheartened by that. But as Paddy said, it was kind of the dissolving belief in certainly the second half at the Liberty. And then, Pete, we bring us right within 4 minutes. We should do it all like this all the time, the amount of time we save. This weekend, it all comes flooding back. The belief is there. Norwich's performance is there. The fight is there. They dug in and they pulled out a goalless draw against Manchester City, which, of course, can only cue survival if you ignore what happened 2 years ago.
You forgot the carrier bags. They were there as well.
Do you think the belief came from that? Do you think those carrier bags actually contained belief that people then sort of plucked out without realising?
We had the clappers. They did the job for us a few years ago, and they're doing the job for Leicester, so why not? Another gimmick to latch onto. But no, it's walking to the ground, it was just the majority of fans that just seemed to be there out of necessity rather than anything else. They'd paid for their season ticket, they thought they'd just go along. But no, completely, the performance was, and it seems to be the pattern now, is these play these teams at the top, put in a decent shift, and the next week you've got someone sort of mid-table down near the bottom, and they're just, what they've done the week before is just a complete waste. It's, unless they're raising their game for the level of opposition, it just, no one before the game would have said you're going to get anything out of this, let alone a point. And the celebrations at the end are like a victory because of the nature of who you're playing. And I don't want to see too many more second halves like that, though. That was just a bit of an onslaught. I don't know what the stats were in terms of possession for the second half. I know they were fairly high in Man City's favour for the whole 90, but yeah. But don't, let's not forget the first half where we, you could say, at least matched them.
Probably had the better chances.
Crossbar away from going 1-0 up.
And even Matt Jarvis' deflected shot, I mean, that literally dropped a yard just wide of the post. Yeah, it's, I think when Norwich City drew 0-0 with Manchester City, it was a bit earlier in the season. I think it was 14 games to go 2 years ago. It was a game that was goalless, and as we were discussing at the time, Pad, they probably could have won it, Norwich, at the end of that one as well. Norwich went on to West Ham and lost. And I know we will come on to what's ahead this coming weekend at West Brom, but it, because of what they did on Saturday, it almost makes the West Brom game so important, because it can just set the tempo for everything else that will go after it.
Well, I mean, ultimately, if you, Pete's right, they haven't backed up. That's unfortunately why they are where they are, because when they've produced a performance like that, and of course off the back of that, there is inevitably now a belief that they can do it, because you look at it, and it's a simple parallel to draw, but if you can match up against the likes of Aguero and Raheem Sterling came on, Kompany was playing, Joe Hart, you know, they didn't have the reserves out. That was Manchester City's, maybe with the exception of Touré and De Bruyne, their best side, and they did arrive, let's be honest, at Carr Road, still harbouring realistic title chances. So there was no, as one or two journalists put to Alex Neil after the game, maybe distractions with this week's Champions League. I mean, they were there to win that game. So it's almost, you know, if you want to break it down to its common denominator, if Norwich can match that team, then why can't they do it against as it will be this weekend, the West Brom, or this year on this maddening run, Bournemouth, Villa, Swansea? But therein lies the conundrum, really, I suppose. But for me, yeah, if they can follow up with a win Saturday, then there's no stopping them then, because then they go into those games against Sunderland and Newcastle and they've almost got the monkey off their back, haven't they, to pick up that first win. But I mean, it was a major achievement. I mean, Pete's right, because I think, given the run they were on, given who they were playing Saturday, for those players still to believe, because they couldn't have put in a performance of that nature if they didn't believe. If what he's done there since the final whistle against Swansea is pretty impressive for me in terms of the mindset, because they looked dead and buried as they trooped off the pitch in Wales. But the contrast with the final whistle on Saturday, it was the Man City players with their head bowed. So, you know, you've got your line in the sand now, lads. Just, you know, try and get that W on the board, and then who knows? I mean, obviously there's other imponderables now, which we'll come on to, I'm sure, in terms of managerial changes in the North East and what Sunderland are doing. But, you know, ultimately, if Norwich can string a win or two together, then I think we're in for a very very exciting end of the season, rather than what it was threatening to become, was a fairly drab procession back to the Championship.
Yeah, we're not going to touch on Manchester City too much, because, you know, they didn't really play like a side desperate to win the title, to be honest, and they've obviously got all sorts of issues with Manuel Pellegrini. It's more than enough national outlets if you want to go and listen to Manchester City's predicament, or be saying, you know, if they hadn't had Sergio Aguero, they wouldn't have had a lot going on Saturday. And I thought it was interesting with Gary O'Neill and Russell Martin both. I mean, Gary kind of touched on the fact that the point just gets their points tally moving again, which hasn't happened since the last time we did a podcast, which is hilarious. And you know, Russell Martin, everything's positive now. You can look forward. We you know, it's the first, as I've written, the first positive result of full-time feeling Norwich have had since the 2nd of January. So, you know, there's so much there for them now to go and take it on.
And then go and win at West Brom. But yeah, the vital thing is, it wasn't another red tick in that little form table you see where Palace are just coloured in red, and then I think we're just slightly behind them. So it stops the rut, doesn't it? And you move on, and even a point at West Brom, you just think, getting into that habit of just not losing a game. And it's amazing what you can do when you play defenders in the right positions as well, isn't it?
We will get onto that in a moment. I think we should just say, for anyone who wasn't at the game on Saturday, the carrier bags. There were green and yellow carrier bags of, you know, various colour, depending on where your seat was, left on people's seats when they arrived, and they were then able to hang up this, hold it up so that it would project yellow and green stripes and some letters.
Not sure about letters, but surely that's the same thing that cardboard can do.
There we go.
In an age where carrier bags are being charged at 5p, so we save the environment, there's suddenly 27,000 of them.
I've hit a nerve. Well, Tim.
Oh, that's all right. I took mine home.
Well, there you go. And you're using it.
Yeah, I'll use it. I'll use it again. It's quite a hefty bag. Not quite a bag for life, but it'll do a job.
Well, there you go. It's a 5p bag you've got for free there.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure I'll be charged for my season ticket next year.
Oh God! Right, okay. Well, Tim Closer liked it all anyway. Pete
Shields.
They were Shields.
Yeah, they were Shields. Well, shall we hear him say Shields and other bits and bobs? Who have we got? Tim Closer, Patrick Bamford, and of course Alec Neil.
I think the players put everything they had into the game and merited what they got. You know, I think we merited a point. Couple of chances in the first half. Graham Dawn was a good chance in the second half for us. But we're pinned back for long spells in that second half. And we need to try and sort of alleviate a bit of pressure. So two bigger lads come on and try to sort of keep the ball up at the top end of the pitch. But it's easier said than done against a real good side. So really, really pleased with what the players gave us.
Some fans, you might get the perception that having what happened here a couple of years ago, there'd be a sense of inevitability about the position in the club, but it kind of alters the thinking, maybe, that everyone's kind of trying to make it end in a different way this time.
Yeah, I think you can see by the effort everyone's putting in that no one's given up yet, and it's so tight down at the bottom, and there's still a lot of games to play for, a lot of points to play for. So it's definitely not over, and anyone who thinks that is a fool.
Did you notice the atmosphere was a bit different today in the ground? It was pretty.
No, it was. That's when we came out. I thought all these white and green and yellow shields, and that was fantastic choreo, by the way. And I really appreciate that support we got from our fans, and we need to get this support in the next few games, and I think that's going to push us forward. Yeah, now we have us.
All right then, Paddy, let's talk about this Norwich City formula that Alec Neil found on Saturday. Has he got to stick with it now? The defensive four, the midfield two in front of them, that new striker?
Well, who knows? Depends. Depends how Tony Pulis. I'm not an advocate of that's worked, so that'll work for the remaining eight games, because you're going to be playing eight teams who conceivably set up completely differently to Man City. So I think you need to be a little bit more flexible than that. But in terms of where you play the players, but certainly for that day, there was no argument really for me with any of the starting lineup. Given Brady wasn't fit, Naismith wasn't fit, wanted to see Bamford start, thought we'd get that type of performance. Bit of a head scratcher on one level. It's commendable he's shown a bit of loyalty to Jerome, but that hasn't worked for two or three matches now, and I'd have had Bamford in before now, but he sees him on the training ground every week, so there's the fitness issues. He hasn't played a lot of football, has he? So he decided this was the game for him. But that was well long overdue for me. Closer, centre back, well, it's Closer and whoever plays alongside him now, clearly. And Martin Olsen at left back, not trying to be wise after the event, said it all season. I asked Alex Neil probably before Christmas now, is Martin Olsen not a better left back than Robbie Brady? He wouldn't have it. So we've persisted with Robbie Brady. I can't see that's done Robbie Brady's game any good. It certainly hasn't done Norwich any good as a defensive unit. So, you know, let's keep Martin Olsen in, and if Brady is fit to return, play him one in front. You know, as you say, play players where then more naturally comfortable. And again, no argument. It's got to be O'Neill and Howson now. They're central two. Obviously, Tete's not going to be anywhere near it injury-wise, but Redmond's the imponderable. You know, if he's out for a few games, and he's got an issue there. But yeah, there was a comfort to it, and And the key thing, and we touched on it, in contrast to Chelsea, they didn't go behind. So you go behind, the game plan has to change. Personnel have to change. So I think it was also not just who played and what positions, but the actual way the game panned out. You know, the longer it went, the crowd started to believe, they got the volume turned up and different mindset entirely. So more of the same, you know, because let's be honest, the first 20 minutes, Man City did fancy it. And, you know, John had to make an excellent save there from Aguero. Another one he shoveled over on a free kick, but they certainly were looking quite dangerous. And unfortunately, if they'd have scored in that spell, I think we'd have had another Chelsea on our hands, or maybe probably a Tottenham.
Yeah, that was the interesting thing with the discussions about game management and how that had improved. I mean, it's very different when you're holding on to something while the game is going on compared to already chasing it. Would you say you don't stick with things for the remaining eight games, but in terms of the back four and John, I mean, is that something you can just leave as it is now? Not go, well, they're quite a big side, so maybe we need to put a load of big, you know, our tallest players at the back, and all they're a bit quicker, so we need to play Ivo Pinto, right? Just let the four of them stay.
You do not need to play Ivo Pinto at the back. Don't even espouse those words to me, Michael. because if you want to be solid and keep any more clean sheets, he is not the man for the defence at the minute. Whatever else he is in this situation, no. You want reliability, you want to minimise risk all over the pitch. You throw him in instead of, say, Russell Martin. I would fear the outcome. So,
that's settled.
Take your point. Yeah, on the back line, yeah. Because we've had this, haven't we, all season about John wasn't doing it, so he came out, Declan went in, and there was changes in front of him. We've had the left back situation, we've had the right back situation, we've had three at the back. Yeah, that did look like, as I say, there did look to be a solidness to that unit. So yeah, no, I take your point on the defensive side of it, then yeah, if fitness and you know, injury and suspension permitting, keep those together, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that will be the key, of course. And as you mentioned, Nathan Redmond went down with an ankle injury in the first half. We don't know how bad that is. I'm guessing he rolled his ankle, didn't he, Pad? So it's going to be a week or two, even if it's not a bad one, I would say, which I think would be a blow, Pete, but some people seem to think it's one of those that, oh no, it'll do us a favour.
How will it do us a favour?
Well, because they don't like Nathan Redmond, I said to assume it. But I mean, to me, Nathan's kind of, he's been good the last few weeks, and he can be a key performer going forward.
Yeah, he's improved a lot the last few weeks. He did have a spell where he was fairly off the boil and wasn't taking players on, but
which he acknowledged himself, actually, I think, after one of the games.
That goal against Chelsea, and yeah, he was playing well up until the injury on Saturday. It's a case of, yeah, how long is he out for? And Brady as well, I don't know if we know the situation on him. Because if he's out for a while, then who did you then put in on the right? Pinto, maybe Pinto the right winger, not the right back.
Somebody said that on the Q&A Monday lunchtime, and that does make a lot of sense, because he'd obviously have the insurance behind him of a Russell Martin, for example, and clearly his strength from what we've seen so far is bombing on. So yeah, that's not a bad shout.
Just, he hasn't ever scored a goal, has he? And I guess he hasn't really made anything yet going forward, but it would be nice to see what he could do maybe in that role without some defensive responsibility, which is a great thing to say about your newly recruited right back.
Yeah, but if Redmond is out for a while and Brady, you've then lost three of your starting four in the middle, haven't you? So it's in this stage of the season, you're getting down to the bare bones.
Yeah, it's quite an injury list. We don't know about Redmond, as we said. In terms, Sebastian Bisson was back on the bench on Saturday, so he seems to be closer to contention, which really leaves Naismith and Brady.
He was hoping they would both train this week, so the fact that he was actually saying that would indicate they can't be that far away. You know, if it was a Alex Tetti type of situation, I think he'd have been a far gloomier forecast. So yeah, we can but hope. Maybe West Brom will come too soon, but it doesn't sound like they're going to be, you know, put into storage for the rest of the season.
Hopefully he wasn't kidding us all on again, and as he did before Friday's game. What else should we talk about from the game? Well, Patrick Bamford, I suppose. It was his first start in the Premier League, wasn't it? His first Premier League start. He struck the bar with a wonderful effort and did okay. I mean, were you impressed enough with him?
He was fairly lively, yeah. He's never going to beat anyone in terms of pace, is he? And he gets the impression that he's a bit lightweight, but he seems quite switched on for his age and got into some clever positions. And that shot that hit the bar, I think, surprised everyone. Yeah. I was expecting the ball to go out to Wes, and I think Wes was as well. But yeah, he's hit it and hit it well. So that's the first time I've really seen him play any sort of length of time, and you don't become the championship player of the season for nothing. So
that's the one thing I would say. I mean, you pick up on his movement and the things he can and can't do, but to me he seems like a player, Pat, who, and I guess he proved it 2 years in the championship, he can make something happen. He can do something out of nothing. He can instigate a spark, and you know, he's almost feels like he's, obviously he's at 22, isn't he, so he's not very old, but he has the potential to be a match winner.
Yeah, and Alex Neil said to me something that resonated. Who was he playing against Saturday? He's playing against Kompany and Otamendi. They are two seriously good centre backs, and he gave them a very good examination, I thought, for the 60 odd minutes he was on the pitch. And inevitably, the nature of that game, we've touched on it at length, Norwich more or less said, there you go, there's the ball, Man City, we'll just try and fill in holes. So, you know, it's difficult for a striker playing one up top against Kompany Otamendi when he's not seeing the ball. So in that context, I thought he was a more than encouraging display. You would think, playing West Brom, he's going to see a lot more of the ball. There's going to be a lot more play in the final third of West Brom. Ball's coming across the box. Let's see what he can do. I just think, you know, if Chelsea come for you in your teens, you've got something about you. And if they keep you on, then you've got something about you. So, and also the lad himself, it didn't go well for him at Palace. You would think there'd be something deep inside that he wants to prove that he is a Premier League player. That can only be good for Norwich, I think, over this period.
And he's still probably a game or two away from really hitting, you know, proper match upness. So we will see. Brings us nicely on to West Brom then, when, you know, maybe Patrick will get another go. Oh, well, we've touched on how big a game it is. I mean, I've seen West Brom twice this year and various other times when they've been playing other people. They look so average. They really do, to me. But I guess it's Tony Pulis, isn't it? He does what he does.
But then we make average teams look better than average.
Make terrible teams look okay. Yeah. Aston Villa have got the worst home record in the league. And, you know, but anyway, let's not get worried about that. But, you know, West Brom.
Yeah, if we can just build on from Saturday and repeat that performance, then it's going to be 3 points. Just not to slip back into what we've done all season and all the hard work for nothing. And once again, it's a wasted away trip for all those fans.
And they need to put the effort in. They need to chase and harry and have that level of work rate that maybe we haven't seen away from home quite a few times this year. I mean, Norwich are on a terrible run away from home, aren't they, Pat? I think they've only scored once since they won at Old Trafford. They haven't picked up a point since then either away from home.
Who did they score against?
Stoke, which is always the one I keep forgetting about, but Johnny Howson's strike. But
oh, what a wonderful strike that was, yeah. I was glad I was sat down when I looked at the table this morning. That they have got 39 points, West Brom. 39 points, that's 14 more than Norwich. How is that possible? that really underlines the impact that Tony Pulis has had, really. I mean, they came down here, didn't they, early in the season and did a classic Pulis number on Norwich. Scored a scrappy goal straight after half time, and then Norwich could have played till now and they wouldn't have scored that day. So, but going back to the points tally, what that to me, in terms of an optimistic look at it from Norwich's point of view, is that there isn't going to, if you know, if they had 25 points as well, then you could imagine there's going to be a desperation to their play because they would target Norwich's 3 points they had to get. So I don't think that desperation is going to be in their play. But again, it all comes back to how Norwich start. If they set the tone right, and you're right, if they show that athleticism and that pressing and that desire to press the ball, then I think there's plenty down for them at the Hawthorns. But, you know, if they're lackadaisical or a bit tentative and sit back and then West Brom get an early goal, then, you know, ultimately it's going to probably go the way of all the other away games you alluded to. But, you know, that is a game for me that they can get something from. And Palace in the same category as well away. They're the two away games now that you look at it on this run and think, if they're going to do it, it's got to happen in those two.
First goal, key, that's the thing. As we know, defensive Norwich score the first goal or concede it, I suppose. We will see how it all goes at the Hawthorn. I mean, it's really reassuring the points tally that they've got, Pat, as you said, because I think having had United at home and, you know, some pretty good, they're in a pretty good run of form, to be honest. Hopefully they just won't be that bothered about Norwich. It's not the most inspiring thing, is it, when you're West Brom and Norwich come visiting? I think Tony Pulis wants them to get to 40 points before they're mathematically safe, obviously, because that's the cliche. So he'll be desperate for that one more point. Okay, let's round this up then, shall we? We are recording on Monday afternoon, which of course means that Newcastle United play Leicester. I have a little bet on Newcastle winning this because I wanted some financial repayment if Rafa Benitez does something special in his first game in charge. Pete, you're an Norwich fan. Lucky you. Rafa Benitez in charge of Newcastle.
Won't make a bit of difference. Team's still awful, isn't it? Shocking.
Go on, Pete.
Nah, Leicester will do them.
Which is probably the key, isn't it, Pad? I don't know if you share Pete's thoughts on that. But the first couple of games, I mean, they've got the North East Derby, of course, after that with Sunderland. They will set the tone, won't they, as to whether this is Rafa stepping in and raising the level or it's all a bit, goes a bit, you know, belly up.
Not sharing Pete's optimism, to be fair. I'm slightly pessimistic on this occasion. I think they might get some in at Leicester. Because if he's going to have any impact, you know, a guy walks in there who's managed Liverpool, lifted the European Cup, managed Real Madrid, for God's sake. You know, he's had Bale, Ronaldo, Benzema in his dressing room. Those players, and yes, they, as a common theme at Newcastle, it seems, in the recent season, they've let McLaren down. They haven't put it in, have they? But they'll certainly put it in for a guy like Benitez straight up. Now, whether that can translate into the results they need to then get build a bit of momentum, well, Leicester will have a big say in that, and obviously Sunderland in the next game, as you rightly said. But yeah, I mean, if they were to maybe win one of these first two or three games, then I fear that might be the catalyst they're looking for, and that's certainly what they're hoping for by making the change. But you know, Pete is right. That is it looks like from the outside anyway, a fairly toxic set of players. So you know, it'll take all Benitez's encouragement to get him firing, I think. But I think in the short term, yeah, because of who he is and what he's done in the game, I think he will get a tune out of those players, sadly.
Ultimately, Norwich will have to win a few of their own games, and maybe, you know, all three teams down there can start dragging in some of the ones who
don't rule out Palace yet. Yeah. I keep on saying it.
It's Palace and Swansea. I mean, as I said, Swansea
look, Swansea, I think, will just sort of stumble over the line. But well, Palace,
you know, they got this weekend, they got Villa. Monster game for them,
yeah,
isn't it?
Got to imagine,
if they win that, then they're safe, aren't they?
And we should touch on the FA Cup because Norwich's home visit from Watford has been postponed because Watford have beaten Arsenal at the Emirates, the holders, and are now in the FA Cup semi-finals. Norwich play the last... Well, it depends if Man United knock out West Ham, which maybe isn't actually that likely given that's a replay, but Norwich can well face all four semi-finalists in their last eight games. And the Watford game could be quite late, couldn't it, in the season once it's rearranged, Pad? So it could have a little bearing on how the run goes.
Definitely, yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how the mechanics of how that works, whether the two clubs have to agree or whether it's imposed on them or what. But if you're Norwich, you want to play them more or less the midweek after the semi-final in the hope that, A, they've gone to extra time, B, they've got beaten. So what state are they going to be? I mean, they're safe, you would think, pretty much, so... You know, a bit of FA Cup heartache would work wonders at the Carrara on a Tuesday night. I fancy a bit of that. If it was there was a lot of talk, weren't there, a few months ago about the final stretch of games. But if you drop in a home game against Watford into the last week or two, then again, that alters the dynamic. So, but I mean, Sunderland will have a similar scenario because I think they were supposed to be playing Everton weekend just gone. So that's going to have to be rescheduled. But whether ultimately it makes any difference or not, I don't know, time will tell, but who knows. Depends, you know, if Norwich have picked up a few results and confidence is high and the momentum's there. If not, then it's not going to make a blind bit of difference.
It's playing everyone twice, but that's, for me, it's still about the order that it all comes in. It definitely. Okay, well, I think that's everything then, really, isn't it? We'll wrap this up, but of course we'll have all the preview information, analysis, what have you, that you'd need beforehand in the Eastern Daily Press, pinken.com. There might even be a few bits on Mustard TV if you're lucky. And then we'll have live coverage at the Hawthorns with myself, pinken.com/live, to live through the crunch game at the Hawthorns. Anything you want to plug, Pete?
Just the usual on the Pinken. Obviously, this podcast and the live coverage. There's always plenty going on during the week, so.
Lovely.
Every day.
Every day. please, says Pete. All right, then, we're done. Thanks, Pad. Thanks, Pete. It's good to be back. Sorry it's been so long again. And we'll see you almost certainly after the Hawthorns at the weekend. Until then, bye for now.